Andrew. I gave you some homework. So
yes, you did.
Yes. There is, okay, with Mitch Marner and the RFA conversation and what would you pay him, and it always comes back to, does he deserve Austin Matthews money like he allegedly wants? And the conversation I always have with every Leaf fan is, does he actually deserve it? Who is the best Leaf? So you do a lot of work with statistics and sport logic. Who, at least by the numbers, is the best Leaf?
Well, if we're talking about specifically on the power play, we can say Marner. If we're talking about all around, it's definitely not Marner. And I know that there's a lot of people who really love Marner and think that he's the greatest player in the world. And he is a very good player, but he might be the most overrated player in the NHL just because the Toronto presence is so powerful. And
jeez.
Sorry, I'm just getting barged in on. But we can agree on a few premises, right? Last year was Marner's best year. He's primarily a playmaker. So one of the stats that I look at when I'm looking at how impactful offensively a player is, for example, is scoring chance generating plays, which is a statistic from Sport Logic that measures how often a player is involved in creating scoring chances for their teammates. So if we go through the whole league among forwards and we see who is the best in the league, the top is Connor McDavid. So automatically right there, good start, right? Number two last year, Sidney Crosby. Number three, Austin Matthews. And then all the way down at number 12 is John Tavares, right with Sebastian Aho. They were tied last year. Then at 22, William Nylander.
Hey, get out of here. That's hilarious.
I know. And then at 26 is Mitch Marner. So 26, that's great, right? So you're in the top one-third of first-line players in the whole league. But you're also fourth on the Leafs and not too far ahead of former Leaf Nazem Kadri. So part of what's going on there is that the Leafs were fantastic at creating scoring chances in general, right? So they have a lot of guys in that top upper echelon, a lot of high-end elite offensive players. But Marner's not the guy driving the bus on his line. It's still John Tavares. And I think that when you look at Marner's season last year, you have to look at the history of Tavares' line mates. Look at what happened to Matt Molson. You look at the, I think, like 40% drop in goals that Andrews Lee saw with John Tavares gone last year in Long Island. This is a thing that John Tavares does for his line mates. They have career seasons with him. So is Mitch Marner a great player? Yes. But is he worth Austin Matthews' money? Well, no, he's not in the Crosby, McDavid echelon of the league. He's also a winger, so he doesn't have that versatility in the middle of the ice. I think he's made great strides defensively, and if we look at how good Marner is at transitioning the puck up the ice, he's right there with Nylander. He's really improved that area of his game. But is he worth that much money? No. I think he's an $8.5 to $9 million player as an unrestricted free agent right now.
Wow.
So as a restricted free agent, I just think his agent and the people giving him advice are severely overvaluing him. And, you know, part of me, the person who wants players to get what they can get, I'm like, good on you. Push for it, man. You've only got so many years in your career to make your money. Mm-hmm. And the NHL doesn't like paying young players. So good for you for pushing the negotiations. And the other part of me is like, where are you getting these numbers? It's just crazy town.
Is it just because we're looking at the raw numbers and saying, okay, 26 goals, but almost 100 points? Like, how did we get here where we value him? Some debates have him valued higher than Austin Matthews in a lot of cases, and that's even considering positional value.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that comes from outside of, I think people really enjoy the way that Mitch Marner plays. It's not necessarily even the point production, because you look at the first two seasons and him and Nylander were basically in lockstep, mm-hmm. right? But almost everyone agreed that Marner was the far superior player. It's just, he's very flashy. The things that he does, it looks like barely anybody else in the league can do them, because his skill set is so fantastical. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the actual raw results of what he's producing, despite the flashiness of it, is not necessarily that much better than a lot of other players in the league. You know, like in terms of ranking him among the RFAs, I think he's significantly better than Rantanen, who I think is a good player, but is probably a fringe first-line guy who got really lucky and got to play with Nathan McKinnon. He's not as good as Braden Point, but he actually was pretty close last year, despite Point being a center. You know, Marner, that relationship with Tavares was phenomenal for both of them. So it really pushed him up last year, but he's behind Aho. He's behind Point by a little bit. He's not the premier guy on the market. So it's one of those things where he might look great to the eye, but you have to take a step back.
With Andrew Berkshire, hockey analyst for Sportsnet. Okay, so I'll take you down this track a little further. We saw how the Nylander thing played out. Is there a point, Andrew, at which, let's just say Mitch doesn't come off of whatever the ask is? Is there a point where if you're Kyle Dubas, you don't sign him for the sake of signing him at whatever number, you hold firm and you let this thing bleed past December 1st?
I feel like he won't let that happen again. I would say it's more likely that he would find a trade partner, right? And as disastrous as that might look from a public relations perspective, it makes more sense than letting William Nylander sit out a full season while Toronto's in compete now mode, right? Marner. And I feel like the reason why I was thinking of Nylander is the big mistake that Dubas made, and, you know, far be it from me to judge a person who's helped build such a good team, but the big mistake that he's made was taking that hard line with Nylander and then in the end not getting much different of a deal than what Nylander group wanted in the first place. So, yes, he wanted to save money there, but if you look at the way that the NHL has changed in that time, they could have just settled with Nylander before camp, and it probably wouldn't have been much different than the contract that he already has. But he has to take this hard line with Marner because the ask is just too astronomical. You know, and he really is in a tough spot here because there's no choice. If he gives in, Toronto's cap situation is going to be screwed for a very long time.
Fun. Lots of fun, Andrew. So
someone say fantastical.
Fantastical. Yes, I love that word. So you already mentioned Marner probably not as high value as Braden Point. What's been driving me nuts is supposedly the market is being held up by Mitch Marner. And looking at some of the names that are still available, Laine, Matthew Tkachuk, Braden Point, like we already said, Kyle Connor, Brock Besser, no one even talks about. How is Mitch Marner the stopgap here? Like, how is he the guy holding up the market? Does everyone think that they're going to get $10 million? Because that seems to be the number that just gets thrown around for everybody now. It's happened in the last year.
And also, just to follow up, Andrew, who's the best RFA out of that group, in your opinion, to help answer Steve's question?
Well, I think it's definitely Braden Point, but I think the gap between Point and Marner was thinned out last season. And, you know, one of the things that I was looking at is, you know, when you're looking at the guys who were RFAs this summer, the guys who are comparable to Mitch Marner in total impact, you know, is Mitch Marner better than Timo Meier? I think most people in Toronto would say yes. The data says no. Meier is actually significantly more productive, and especially when you look at how much more rare a goal scorer is than a playmaker. So you look at what Meier signed for, and it's hard to reconcile what Marner wants. But I think Marner's camp has made him the person setting the market by being so public about the demands. So I think most outside of Aho and Meier, who just, you know, signed with their smaller market teams at ridiculous contracts, thanks in part to the Montreal Canadiens for one, you've got a lot of players who are worth a lot of money just sitting and waiting and seeing, is it possible that the Marner camp can actually get this much money? Because if they can, then maybe I can get almost that much. You know, I don't think Rantanen's going to get that much from Colorado. They just don't have the money Toronto does. But, you know, Tampa Bay, with that tax incentive there, I think Braden Point's going to get a lot of money. So it's interesting to see the market not necessarily held up by the best player. Or, you know, I don't know about how NHL player or NHL executives view these guys, but maybe Marner isn't even seen as the best player. But the market is set by Marner because of the agent's public demands.